The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good evening. Is the volume okay? Does it seem good? Tonight, in reflecting on what to speak about, I thought about it being the new year and the new year being a time sometimes to reflect on or think about our direction or our what we'd like to become, perhaps, or how we'd like to be. And so I thought of reflecting, offering some reflections on aspiration this evening and how perhaps we can live our aspirations instead of just putting them out there. Because our aspirations, whatever we do, however we act, that all arises in the present moment. The choices that we make right now are what shape us, what shape our lives, what shape our future. And that's the only place anything happens, is in this moment, in this present moment. And so if we just think about our aspiration but don't do something or act or try to connect it with how we are right now, then it doesn't have as much opportunity to unfold or to grow. And so to just reflect a little bit on that topic, the choices that we make in the present moment are influenced by many things, and much of the time our choices here and now are related to or based on habits. They're based on our, what's happened to us in the past. They're conditioned, basically. And if we're not really aware of making those choices in the present moment, that is what will be unfolding. Because our choices now are going to be kind of motivated by what's come before. But we do have this opportunity in the present moment to bring in or to reflect on something new, to reflect on how would I like to be right now? What qualities would be useful to put into the world? And with those reflections, perhaps something different can happen, something other than the conditioned tendencies that we've lived our lives with. So aspiration, I like the word aspiration because it does seem to connect with something beautiful inside of us. The word itself seems to inspire a kind of a reflection on what is my deepest wish for myself, or what is my deepest hope for myself in the world. And so that's what I'd like you to take some time to think about. What is your deepest wish for yourself? What is your deepest aspiration? And is that aspiration connected in some way to the principles or the teachings, let's say, of the Dharma, the teachings around kindness and non-harming, the teachings of compassion and wisdom? So we might, it's this reflection on aspiration, what is my deepest aspiration? Sometimes it can be a refinement. Maybe right now, just reflecting, like what is my, some different ways to ask the question, what's my deepest aspiration? What am I most inspired by? Those kinds of questions. I'm not looking for what do I want to do so much, actions that I want to take or things that I want to get or have, but more kind of underneath that. It's like, what is it that motivates me? What is it that my best, the best of me, wants to express. Something like that. Maybe it could start with something simple and then get a little more refined. Maybe start with something that you'd like to do or something that inspires you to act on, and then reflect on what's underneath that. What's the meaning of it? What's the motivation? What's the connection to the heart, perhaps? Why do you want to do this? And it may come back to something really that seems very simple, like kindness or care or help, compassion. It might come to compassion. Often it connects to a heart quality, this sense of aspiration. It connects to something the heart wishes. Maybe the wish to be happy. And yet so often, I know that somebody asked me a long time ago, probably I was 20, you know, what do you want? And I said, I guess I want to be happy. But the only way I knew about happiness was to get things, to acquire things, to accomplish things. And so that wish for happiness is a beautiful wish, and yet there was some misunderstanding about how to go about it, about what actual happiness meant. I spent the next 20 years from that moment trying to get things, acquire things, find things, have things, do things, and I was about 38 when I finally realized that project wasn't working. And that brought me to the Dharma, where a whole different set of teachings and understandings helped me to recognize that there's a different kind of happiness that's possible. And so that became, I think my aspiration hasn't changed, really, you know, that kind of happiness of freedom, the happiness of not being motivated by greed and aversion and delusion and all of those things that make us so anxious and caught and all of those challenging emotions, those reactive emotions, that my deeper wish for happiness is the same, but my understanding of how and what to do has changed in that process of kind of refining the aspiration in my life. And I spent a long time kind of wandering in fields that didn't produce much. I mean, I would get a little bit of happiness here and there, and then there'd be long stretches of not much happiness. And so to reflect on, I think it's helpful, you're all here in a Dharma community, and so it's helpful to reflect on whether your aspirations are connected in some way, your deepest aspirations are connected in some way with some of the teachings that the Buddha points to about how and what are useful motivations for us. Truthfulness and wisdom, and kindness, non-harming, ethical conduct. Are your aspirations in some way, can they be tied back to these more really simple, basic ways of connecting with each other? Can they be connected back to that? And then, if you have a sense of something that inspires you. Maybe kindness. You know, it can be that simple. The Dalai Lama at one point said, "My religion is kindness." That was his inspiration, his aspiration, his kind of motivation. Can I act with kindness? And he's famously said, you know, whenever possible, be kind. And it's always possible. And so this is a way to begin to look at how or what might it mean to take an aspiration and look at our lives through that perspective. So if there's an aspiration for kindness, for example, it's like that can unfold wherever we are, whatever we're doing. It doesn't take that we have to go find somebody to be kind to. We can be kind while we're driving on the freeway and let somebody have an easy merge. We might be able to be kind when we go to the grocery store and give a smile to the cashier. And so it might be interesting to, you know, if you have a sense of a quality that feels like something that's inspiring or motivating, something like kindness or compassion or non-harming. It's like, look at your day. You know, you might just reflect on your day and think, what do I have to do today? And instead of thinking about those things that you have to do from the usual perspective of what motivates those things, maybe you can reflect on your day and think, okay, well, I have that meeting with that person. And can kindness be the top of the list in that meeting? Even though it's like it's not on the agenda? Can it be the place where I come from? And so looking at your, you know, what are your deeper aspirations and how might they be able to be lived? How might they be able to be lived in the moment? Not trying to make something, not trying to do something special to find a way to have those aspirations come to fruition, but how can they come to fruition in your everyday lives? How can they come to fruition there? And some of this is really just reflection, you know, because there are ways in which we can frame our experience and reflect on our experience through these perspectives of the Dharma. All of our interactions, all of our relationships, all of our actions, can they be brought back to some connection with the Dharma? You know, so for example, I was out for dinner with some teacher friends one evening, and we were, you know, paying the bill and doing that kind of, you know, at the end of the meal, divvying things up. And one of my colleagues turned to me and said, "Have you ever reflected on how our doing this, how our paying for this meal is offering, it's a gift of generosity to the person who's working here. It's offering them a livelihood." And I said, "Wow, no, I hadn't thought about that." You know, it kind of turned around the exchange from being something transactional to being something more relational and connected. There's so many different ways in which we can have our relationships connected through the acts of generosity, of giving and receiving. That's what our relationships are, is giving and receiving. So can it be conscious? Can we become aware of where that is happening? That act of generosity, act of giving and receiving can be conducted in a kind of transactional way, or it can be conducted in a caring way. It can be conducted with kindness and connection. And so in reflecting on an aspiration for yourself, reflecting on what am I most inspired by, what am I most motivated by, looking at ways in which you might be able to frame your experiences through that lens, but also how can you cultivate? So that's one way to kind of go about encouraging that aspiration to grow. I think a certain aspiration, some aspirations may have the quality of like attaining something or some place, right? It's like I get to that thing or that place. The kinds of aspirations I'm talking about this evening are more along the lines of qualities that are worth developing. Can I engage with my life from the perspective of peace, or if my aim is, or my aspiration is peace, can I live that peace? Can I, or if my aspiration is to be kind, can I live that kindness? So this kind of framing our encounters through the perspective is one way to explore kind of having that quality, having that aspiration come to fruition, that quality or that becomes more how you live your life. So this reminds me, I said this the other day too. I think this was the Dalai Lama too. But it points to for all of these kinds of aspirations, you know, he said, you know, there is no path to peace. Peace is the path. And likewise, it's almost like you could put any wholesome quality in there. There is no path to kindness. Kindness is the path. There is no path to generosity. Generosity is the path. And so the exploration of that, you know, some of this can be cultivated or can be explored through this, reminding ourselves that I can, in the grocery store, have kindness be a priority. I've seen, actually, it's not that hard when I remember it. It's hard to remember it sometimes. But when I remember it, it's not that hard to bring that aspiration in sometimes. There was a period of time where I was doing a walk in my neighborhood around the same time each day, and I seemed to run into the same people on that walk, and I began to recognize and notice that the kind of the friendly smile was a form of generosity and a form of kindness. And when I offered a smile, and I didn't force it on people, but you know, if they happened to look up and make eye contact, I would smile at them. And very often, I got a smile back. And not only did I feel the benefit of the offering of a connection on my side, but I got like many times more response or feeling of delight and happiness back. So a small act of kindness of just offering a smile offered so much back to me. And so that almost became a practice on my walk. I decided that it became the kind of the walk of happiness. You know, I would just do this walk and smile at as many people as I could and see. There's one time I even kind of measured it. It's like, how long does the happiness of getting a smile last? It was amazing. It was like at least 40 seconds. And so we can cultivate and kind of frame or remember, if my intention is to be kind, to be caring, to connect, then that is something I can do in small ways, in simple and small ways, in whatever I'm doing. I can do that. I can explore that and see what happens. And that's one way to cultivate or to move in the direction of that aspiration. And then there are all of those times when, if we're holding an aspiration of something like kindness or generosity, and we might be thinking about practicing that. It might feel like, you know, there's a lot of times where I'm not feeling kind or I'm not feeling generous. I'm not feeling that. And so what does it mean to cultivate that in those times? What is that? How does that work? Sometimes, I'd say before I really started exploring this kind of practice, I kind of felt like, you know, if I gave somebody something, or if I, you know, acted with generosity, but I didn't feel generous, it was almost like deceitful or something. You know, that it just didn't feel kind of right. Or if I like pretended I was kind and I didn't feel like I liked the person, you know, it just felt like it just didn't feel right somehow. And so my understanding of this has changed quite a bit since I've understood this practice and started engaging in different ways. And the kind of exploration that can be interesting is, if you're interested in cultivating a certain quality, like kindness, for instance, and you don't feel kind in a given moment, and you're aware of that, that's an important part, is being aware of what's actually going on. It's a feeling, maybe in a particular exchange or with a particular person, there's something coming up in you inside that's like, well, there's a lot of things. Perhaps there's a feeling of distrust or a feeling of uncertainty or a feeling of a little bit of fear or something in terms of being kind or not being sure how something will be received. And so there can be a lot of kind of what we might think of as warning signs happening. And if we ignore those warning signs or try to repress them and do something, kind of counter to those feelings, sometimes that can rebound on us and it cannot have such a good effect. But if we really consciously are aware of our feelings, and yet even knowing that, knowing those feelings, we choose to act with kindness or care, with the intention internally of kind of cultivating kindness, that has a rebound effect on us. And so it's not that what's important is that we know clearly in our own being what's happening internally, to not try to repress that fear, that uncertainty, that lack of trust. So this is where mindfulness comes in. We need to be really clear with what's going on internally and make a decision based on what feels, based on that mindfulness, based on that understanding what's happening internally, make a decision about how to act based on that, but also potentially stretching to incorporate or include more wholesome qualities. So we can choose to act with kindness even if we're not feeling kind. We can choose to act with patience even if we're not feeling patient. We can choose to act with generosity, act even if we're not feeling that generosity. Not to kind of deny or repress what we're feeling, but completely fully acknowledge, yep, this is how I'm feeling, and I'm going to do this with the intention of moving in the direction of generosity or kindness. And then just see what happens. Sometimes this is a much slower process, the development and the what happens when you try something like that. But sometimes it can be quite surprising how quickly something can change. So there was a period of time where I had my aspiration was to look at and explore the quality of patience. I had seen that impatience was really big in my life, and I could see that there was a lot of suffering that came from that impatience. And so there was some motivation to explore this. And it wasn't that I just went around trying to be patient all the time. A lot of the exploration of this kind of thing is like, notice what's in the way. And so I started noticing the impatience when impatience was arising. It was actually stunning to me just how much it was shot through just about everything I did. You know, I knew I was impatient in situations where there were big things happening, but I was less aware that I was impatient, like while I was brushing my teeth or when I was finishing the shower, getting ready to get out of the shower, that this little hit of impatience, or when I'm pulling open a drawer and it sticks a little bit, that flash of impatience. And so I saw a lot of it. And in this process of exploring the impatience in terms of, curiosity about how can patience be cultivated, how can I have this aspiration towards patience, I was noticing these little flashes of impatience all over the place. And one day I was at the store, and I was noticing, actually what I noticed was that I was throwing things into my shopping basket, that there was a physical kind of impatience in my body. And I noticed that. And in that moment, it's like, okay, well, there's impatience here. And it certainly didn't go away in that moment. But I did realize that it was affecting my action. And I could have seen that. I don't remember seeing that at that particular time, but I do see now, like if I'm pulling open a drawer and it sticks a little bit, you know, the action of yanking it harder, that's coming from impatience. You know, so there's some physical manifestations of these qualities. So there could be physical manifestations of like unkindness, for example, in a situation with somebody, if you're feeling a sense of distrust or a feeling of, uncertainty, that may be kind of leaking out in some ways. And so, come back to this story of patience and impatience, what I decided to do in that moment was to not let the impatience leak out into my actions, but not to repress the impatience internally at all. And so this is a kind of a very subtle way of exploring the kind of the dynamic between what motivates us and how that motivation kind of ripples out into our actions. And so I saw that, you know, picking something up off the shelf and throwing it in the basket, you know, it wasn't like a major thing, but I decided that I would start not, if somebody was looking at me, they could probably tell I was a little bit impatient, you know, by seeing me throw things into the basket. And I decided to see if I could fully feel that impatience, but not let anybody else have any clue that I was impatient. And so I started being more careful. I'd pick something up off the shelf and I'd place it carefully in my basket. It took about 30 seconds for that impatience to go away and to be replaced by a feeling of spaciousness and calm and ease. And that was primarily noticing the impatience and seeing, okay, it's here, I know it's here, but can I not act it out? Can I not let it leak out in my actions? And so this is another way to explore cultivating these aspirations. If I'm not feeling peaceful, And it might even be at home. You know, it doesn't have to be with anybody in the room or anything. But if I'm not feeling peaceful and I find myself kind of fidgety in my chair or you know, kind of doing, you know, bopping around, just feeling, can I know that feeling internally, but maybe let my actions not express that? This is a very interesting practice that I found has a lot of power to it. That it can begin to, if you're willing to sit with the feeling that's opposite from the quality or the aspiration that you have, but not let it leak out into your behavior, with the intention of cultivating or encouraging that quality, it can have a very strong, the non-acting on that, in my case, the impatience, had a very strong rebound effect on the mind. I didn't have to stop being impatient. It just let go. So the Buddha actually points to, or in one of the teachings that the Buddha offered, he points to this notion of what the Dalai Lama said, you know, there is no path to peace. Peace is the path. And that's kind of what I was describing. Oh, there's no path to patience. Patience is the path. When impatience arises, not trying to pretend I'm patient, but seeing, can I not let it leak out into my behavior? Letting it leak out into the behavior kind of almost inadvertently has it rebound on us. It's like reinforcing the impatience. Likewise with any of these other qualities. There is no path to peace. Peace is the path. And yet, if the absence of peace is what's here, we don't have to feel like we're not on the path. Awareness that peace isn't here, that is what's happening. And maybe I can behave in a way as if, like, model. What would it be like if the wisest person I knew could take up residence in my body right now, and the most peaceful person I know could take up residence in my body right now, how would they be? Can I act that way? It's like almost modeling what we're aspiring to. It's a form of practicing these qualities. And in a way, there's a teaching. I find it really inspiring, actually, that talks about the path of practice. It's encompassed in a set of poems they're in a book called the Sutta Nipata. And there's 16 poems, and the poems are basically an ode to non-clinging. That's the kind of the overarching theme of these poems, is that clinging is what creates the struggle, the suffering, the stress, and non-clinging is the path to peace. And so it's kind of like an ode to peace and how to do that. And so there's certain poems that describe the kind of the condition, the human condition, the struggle. There's other poems that describe the state of ease and peace. And then there are some poems that talk about how does one get there. And so I'll read a couple of selections here. So this one is somebody asking the Buddha, tell me about someone who's peaceful. And so this is kind of a description of what a peaceful person is. And partly I really like this this description because it's very down to earth. It's very grounded in what we can all recognize. It's not like esoteric kind of description of a person. So the questioner says, "Tell me about one who is peaceful." And the Buddha responds, "A person who does not cling to the future, nor sorrow over the past, who finds seclusion amidst sense contacts and is not led astray by views, a person who is retiring, not deceitful, not covetous, not selfish, not impudent, not arousing contempt, who does not engage in malicious speech, a person who does not relish pleasure, who is not conceited, who is mild and of ready wit, who is not credulous and not bored, a person who is even-tempered, constantly mindful, who does not suppose that anyone in the world is his equal, better, or lesser, who is free of conceit. This is someone I call peaceful." And then in terms of the path of how one gets there, in this case, the questioner says, "Speak about the path of practice. How does one practice?" The Buddha says, "A person should not have covetous eyes, should not be greedy for flavors, should not cherish anything in the world. Being meditative, one should not be footloose, should desist from worrying, should not be indolent, should live in lodgings where there's little noise, should be given to wakefulness, should abandon laziness, deception, various kinds of amusements. One should not fear blame, nor should they be conceited when praised. One should not be a boaster, should not speak scheming words, should not make a habit of impudence, should not utter quarrelsome speech. One should not be moved to tell lies, should not be treacherous, should not despise others for their way of life. If ordinary people irritate him with their talkativeness, they should not respond harshly, for the peaceful do not retaliate. Knowing the cooling of desire as peace, one should not be negligent in applying the teachings." And so to me, this is like the description of a person who is free, who is peaceful. It's a description of a lot of things they're not, some things that they are, but a lot of things that they're not. And then the description of the training is one should model that. You should try to not be greedy. And yet, and as I said in my exploration around impatience, that trying to not be greedy or trying to not be covetous or trying to not retaliate, I mean, part of what's going to happen is that we're going to notice that we want to. And so we can't just repress. And so we have to explore this modeling in a way that allows us to own and be and to honor what is coming up here. To honor the confusion, to honor the lack of kindness, the lack of patience, to honor that, but then see, okay, how would the Buddha be here? So how would somebody who is awakened, how would somebody who is peaceful be in this situation? And can I model that? But not with repressing what's there. That is so, that's the piece I really found in my own practice. That does not work. It just drives it underground and it comes out later. And so this kind of interesting, it's like walking a knife edge of knowing and feeling the feelings and seeing and how how might I act peacefully? Feeling non-peace, what would it look like to act peacefully? So there's a few kind of key pieces in terms of action. And I think in terms of our actions with others, one of the biggest is non-harming, to aspire to that, to aspire to engage in our interactions with others in ways that will not cause harm. And the Buddha talked about this with his son. The very first teaching he gave to his son when his son was 7 years old, he encouraged him to reflect on his interactions with others. And he said, before you act, think about whether it's going to make the other person or yourself or both of you feel distress, feel some kind of affliction. And if it is, then don't do it. And while you're doing it, make the same reflection. Is it creating distress? If so, stop. And after you've acted, reflect back. Did it create distress? And here he says, undertake restraint for the future. You know, it's not about beating yourself up. He doesn't say, tell yourself you're a terrible person. It's like, move on. And learn from your mistakes. There's so much that we don't know. You know, it's like in this process of looking at our actions and our intentions in the moment, we can reflect before and not have some information, perhaps, not know something about someone else. And not know that it would cause them distress to hear us say something. And so we say it. And then it's apparent that there's distress happening. And so the question is not, how could I have not done that? But the question is, what can I learn? What did I not understand? And so that reflection, continually looking at, as we explore cultivating this edge of our aspiration, where we kind of get messed up or where we get confused or caught. What did I not understand? What can I learn here? So those are my reflections. Any thoughts or comments or questions about anything?
When you're talking about impatience and not repressing it, it reminded me of something I realized when I, you know, when I'm really nervous or anxious about something in situations like maybe you're at the airport and you have to interact with somebody, and that if I were really anxious or nervous and I either acted it out or repressed it, the response of the other person was annoyance, even in the repression situation. But if I was very aware of it, but let it all hang out, the response was frequently compassion. Hmm. And I don't, it's a subtle effect. I don't know why, because it didn't have anything to do with doing anything, really. They could just sense somehow the energy was different. Maybe it like kept it contained in me, so they felt less like they were going to be contaminated by it or something. But I just thought that was an interesting effect, also on others, not just yourself. But.
Yeah, I think there's something similar there about the repression really kind of driving it under, because it doesn't, it just repressing it, it's coming out. You know, it's coming out in the expression in your face and the tone in your voice and all kinds of things. And so, you know, if you basically come up to the person and say, wow, I'm really frustrated right now. I've just lost, you know, I got kicked off the plane and, you know, and so you're kind of really upfront with it, you know, then at least they understand where you're coming from. Yeah. And it doesn't drive it underground. So, yeah. Yeah. Other thoughts or reflections? Okay, well, let's just sit together for a moment. Maybe we can do a reflection after this. But first, just letting yourself settle into your body. What is your deepest aspiration? What inspires you? Letting your mind kind of wander. You don't have to try to hold it still, but just hold this question. You might start with a little bit of thinking, I'd like to accomplish this or do that, but reflecting on what's the underlying motivation? Is there something deeper, more fundamental, or meaningful? It might be expressed as a feeling more than a thought. And if there's some kind of feeling that arises with this question, just let yourself sit with the feeling. You don't have to have an answer so much. Might be felt as a yearning or an ache or and what's that feeling? Is there a way in which there can be a connection to kindness, compassion, generosity? Truthfulness. Wisdom or peace. some of those pointings that the Buddha aims us at. And then maybe taking a minute or so to reflect about, with whatever sense you have of an aspiration, how it might be connected to the rest of your day today, going home, driving or riding home, going into your house. How might this be reflected in these simple everyday actions? Getting into bed, can this aspiration connect with how you are in the moment? Happy New Year.